This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Sandwell News for the blind and vision impaired community living in and around Sandwell. This edition due with you on Saturday, the 23rd of May, though for internet users and those who get the podcast, it will hopefully be with you a day or so earlier than that. Coming up now, the sunrise and sunset times and the weather you might expect in the first part of next week.
This week, sunrise will be at just before 5 a.m, sunset at 9:15. Temperatures should reach 23 degrees, continuing the warm days we've had over the bank holiday.
Next up, this week's activities organised by SVI, after which you'll hear the headlines from this week's papers.
Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here is the list of activities taking place next week. Tuesday, 26th May. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing. Please note that there will be no line dancing this week. Wednesday, 27th May. Aquafit, Portway Lifestyle Centre. 1 to 2 p.m. Get summer body ready. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone, with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you are interested. Thursday, 28th of May. Showdown. Unfortunately, no showdown this week. Showdown will return on Tuesday, 2nd of June. Active 60 trip to the Valley, Evesham, meeting at 9:45 a.m. Join us for some fresh country air and a day out at the Valley, Evesham, with cafes, outdoor activities, a garden centre and shops. There is something for everyone. There's even a little train that will take you round the country park if you don't fancy a walk. We will meet at West Bromwich bus station at 9:45 for a 10 a.m. departure. We will hopefully be back in West Bromwich by approximately 5 p.m. Cost of travel per person is £15. There is no entrance fee for the Valley, however, there is a charge for the train and some other activities. It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. SVI Team Sandwell, Visually Impaired, West Bromwich. Telephone 0121 525 4810.
Some pieces from the week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday, 13th, April news. High salt levels in sandwiches. Lifts have not caught up with obesity levels. Ghost buses. Communities losing green spaces. Social effects of lost spaces. Murder defendant says sorry. Thursday. Angry baggies won't appeal. Denial of planning permission for HMO is overturned. Police praise victims' bravery. Reform council leaders pledge on taking control. On this day, May the 14th, Friday. Will changing colour of buses make for a better service? Arrest made after M6 crash, stolen car found in woods. Mew recording studio opens. Prince of Wales is a genuine villain. Saturday. Delivery driver found guilty of murder of sex worker. 3. Accused in drugs trial will not give evidence. Man's body found in M54 Woodland. 5 things we love this week. Monday. Is the political crisis making you anxious? Purple votes the best bus colour. Albion roll the dice on duo. Nurses trying to stay safe on duty. Kids go to 5 countries before they're 8. Tuesday. Law firm expands its negligence services. 7 years jail sentence for shooting food bank items stolen. Arrests over illegal tobacco.
Those stories, of course, taken from Express and Star with their kind permission. Now, one thing I should have included last week and didn't, very remiss of me, was the election results, ward by ward. Do apologise for that, but here they are, and I hope they're better a week later than never.
Sandwell Council. List of 24 wards on Sandwell Council, each ward electing 3 councillors. Bearwood. Hilary Grandy, Green. John Tipper, Green. Jennifer Hemingway, Labour. Blackheath. Michael Cooper, Reform. Dave Williams, Reform. Mona Kurana, Reform. Bristonhall. Jonathan Fox, Reform. Amalak Dawara, Labour. Leanne Winsper, Reform. Charlemont and Grove Vale. Bob Jones, Reform. Ray Nock, Reform. Rachel Mitchell, Reform. Cradley Heath and Old Hill. Mark Johnson, Reform. Craig Morris, Reform. John Williams, Reform. Friar Park and Stone Cross. Nick Fawcett, Reform. Lisa Weaver, Reform. Jack Sabra Harwell, Reform. Great Bar, Tamebridge and Ewtree. Connor Norton, Labour. Michaela Alcock, Labour. Margaret Sutton, Reform. Great Bridge. Keith Edge, Reform. Mark Webb, Reform. Brad Sims, Reform. Grits Green and Ling. Mohammed Ahad, Labour. Pam Randhawar, Labour. Jackie Taylor, Labour. Ateley Heath. Paul Moore, Labour. Mandeep Singh, Labour. Stephen Fellows, Reform. Hilltop. Dean Hollywood, Reform. Aman Hussein, Reform. Aaron Kutan, Reform. Langley. Pete Durnall, Reform. Paul Levy, Reform. Tuli Zeffi, Reform. Newton Valley, Keith Alcock, Labour. Kenny Jinks, Reform. Elaine Giles, Labour. Old Worley, Carl Leach, Reform. Connor Marshall, Reform. Luke Cotterill, Labour. Albury, Nagi Daya Singh, Labour. Susanna Hartwell, Labour. Rizwan Jali, Labour. Prince's End, Gary Dale, Reform. Neil Shrivington, Reform. Geoffrey Sutton, Reform. Rowley. Paul Tromans, Reform. Richie Massey, Reform. Jeet Tahim, Reform. Smethwick. Parminda Kaur, Labour. Luke Davis, Labour. Ash Lewis, Labour. Soho and Victoria. Raghim Fihi, Labour. Farooq Shaheen, Labour. Mohammed Udin, Labour. St Paul's. Aquila Chowdhury, Labour. Abdid Hussein, Labour. Chan Padda, Labour. Tipton Green. Richard Jeffcoat, Independent. Tim Hordley, Reform. Matt Lloyd, Reform. Tividale. Ken Parsons, Reform. Mariah Crompton, Labour. Lou Yates, Reform. Wensbury, Jeremy Handley, Reform. Owen Nelson, Reform. Paul Snape, Reform. West Bromwich Central, Tyrath Dat, Labour. Leon Priest, Labour. Harpal Tawana, Labour.
Thanks to Linda, one of last week's readers, for reading those ward results. Coming up as usual, we have the TV and radio listings from Talking News Federation. I'll be including, too, the latest SVI Activities newsletter for June going into July. And if there's space, there might be another Talking News Federation piece. But to start with, before we actually get to the news, here is Sophie Shuttlewood with some news of her upcoming Nature Connections walk.
Hi, Sophie here from Wandering Nature. I'd like to tell you about the second session of Nature Connection Through the Senses. It's going to happen on Monday the 1st of June in West Smethwick Park, meeting at 1:30 p.m. until 4 p.m. and the title is Navigating Through Sense. So we will meet in the cafe at 1:30 and I'll introduce the session. And then we will be working through aspects of the park landscape using the variety of senses. I've got a lot of playfulness planned within this, but I'm going to keep that under my hat. You'll have to come and be part of it to find out what's happening. If you'd like to be involved, please sign up with Sandwell Visually Impaired. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star, the 13th of May. Popular sandwiches contains alarmingly high salt levels. One shop-bought sandwich contains more salt than almost 5 cheeseburgers. This story is brought to you by Josie Clark, Consumer Affairs Correspondent. Some of the UK's most popular shop-bought sandwiches contain alarmingly high levels of salt, with one containing more than almost 5 McDonald's cheeseburgers, according to a study. Action on Salt and Sugar analysed 546 sandwiches, wraps, rolls and baguettes sold in supermarkets and high street chains to find that 1 in 10 exceeded the salt and calorie health targets. Almost half, that's 44%, would carry a red or high salt warning on their front of pack labelling, whilst 32 delivered half or more of adults' maximum daily limit in a single serving if found. Action on Salt and Sugar said that the findings laid bare the scale of hidden salt in everyday lunch choices and exposed the failure of the government's voluntary approach in improving the nutritional quality of food. The charity named the Smoked Chicken Caesar Club sold by upmarket cafe chain Gales as the worst offender, finding that it contained a staggering 6.88 grams of salt, equivalent to nearly 10 rashers of bacon or 5 McDonald's cheeseburgers. Adults should consume no more than 6 grams of salt a day, or around 1 level tablespoon, according to the UK Health Guides. Furthermore, the sandwich also contains 1,067 calories, 90% of an adult's maximum daily saturated fat limit, whilst providing only 20% of an adult's recommended fibre intake, the study found. However, the wider picture was equally poor, with researchers finding that a third of sandwiches surveyed would receive a red warning on front-of-pack labelling for saturated fat and more than 1 in 7 high in fat, saturated fat and salt simultaneously. Almost all the sandwiches surveyed, that's 97%, failed to provide even a third of the daily recommended fibre intake. A quarter of the sandwiches, that's 25%, were also classified as less healthy under the current 2004/5 nutrient profiling model, limiting how and where they can promote to shoppers. The research found that the sandwiches brought out-of-home OOH were generally saltier than those sold in supermarkets. Amongst the poorest performers were naturally salty or heavily processed ingredients, which were Gales Smoked Salmon Bagel with Schmear, that's spelled S-C-H-M-E-A-R, and Pickled Pink Onions containing 4.2 of salt, and Paul's Rosette Cheese Salami Gherkin containing 4.19 grams of salt, which the study found. This was followed by a Pret-a-Manger's ham and grieve baguette with 3.85 grams per serving. The study found that other products, particularly high in salt, included Tesco's fully loaded hot honey halloumi, falafel and pickled slaw in 3.78 grams. 222 Moo's Sriracha Pork Sando at 3.67 grams and Sainsbury's Kitchen Deli Pastrami Cheddar Cheese and Gherkin Mustard Mayo at 3.67 grams, all containing more salt than 12 standard bags of ready-salted crisps. However, Action on Salt and Sugar found wide differences in the salt content of similar sandwiches and fillings, such as Pret-a-Manger's chicken salad sandwich containing 2.22 grams of salt and Greg's roast chicken salad sandwich containing half as much again with only 1.1 grams of salt. Elevators question as capacity has not risen with obesity. This story is brought to you by Ella Pickover. The safety of lifts in buildings could be compromised as manufacturers have failed to adapt to a rising level of obesity, a conference has been told. An expert said that the lift capacity signs for the maximum number of passengers are out of date. It said that this could lead to longer journey times and potential safety issues. It could also lead to stigma by suggesting that more people can fit into an elevator than it's actually comfortable. Lift manufacturers are required to display maximum number of passengers the lifts can accommodate, and a researcher wanted to examine whether lift design had kept in line with trends in weight over time. In the mid-1970s in the UK, the average weight of a man was 75 kilograms, and at the same time the average weight of a woman was 65 kilograms. Now this is around 86 kilograms for men and 73 kilograms for women, they added. Between 2000 and 2024, Professor Nick Finner, president of the International Prader-Willi Syndrome Organisation, gathered data from 112 lifts across the UK, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Austria and Finland. The lifts have been manufactured by 21 companies between 1970 and 2024. Average weight allowance per person, which is calculated by dividing maximum weight allowance by the maximum number of passengers for the year of manufacturer, was compared to the average adult weight for that year obtained from the UK National Health Survey. He found that between 1972 and 2002, the maximum weight in lifts had correlated to increasing population weight. But after 2002, there was no significant increase in the assumed average weight of a lift user. He said that manufacturers assumed average weight remained at 75 kilograms, whilst the average population weight was 79 kilograms. Professor Finner told the European Congress on Obesity in Istanbul, Turkey, the failure of lift manufacturers to adapt to the rising levels of obesity and body sizes means that lift capacities are overestimated, meaning that journey times are likely to be increased and that safety could be compromised. What's more, suggesting more people can fit in a lift than is comfortable is stigmatising people living with obesity. In an abstract presented to the conference, he said that overall manufacturers were not adjusting to the capacity of lifts to reflect secular increases in population average weights. And according to the NHS, 30% of adults in England were obese in 2024. In the same year, 66% of adults in England were either overweight or obese. Passengers assured work ongoing to tackle frustration of ghost buses. Passengers enduring the frustration of ghost buses not arriving as advertised are being assured work is being done to tackle it. Members of the West Midlands Combined Authority, that's the WMCA, Transport Overview and Scrutiny Committee, were set to discuss the region's bus real-time information RTI system at a meeting this week. Ghost buses are services which are listed on bus stop or station electronic information boards but then never arrive, and officers said efforts have been made to successfully bring these down to a minimum. A report to the committee said work had been focused on a number of areas to improve the overall information system for passengers. This includes tackling ghost buses, implementing automated cancellations from the National Express West Midlands lost mileage recording system, and providing RTI everywhere QR codes at bus stops. It also said there would be opportunities for improving the RTI when the region's network transitions over to a franchise model from next year. The report said that the reporting of ghost buses, a term used to describe a prediction countdown for a vehicle that never arrives, came to prominence shortly following the COVID pandemic, where a larger than normal percentage of journeys were curtailed or cancelled, mainly through driver unavailability at the time. Data provided through audits of the system enabled technical investigation into the logic used to the back office system to determine the RTI prediction displayed to passengers. Through a series of controlled amendments and carrying out post-change checks, it's been shown these amendments have been successful and the number of ghost buses reported are now minimal, if at all. An audit carried out between February the 16th and 23rd saw 52 bus stops observed and confirmed ghost buses occurrences. In a similar exercise carried out between December the 1st and 13th, three instances were observed. The report added that under a franchising model, all services will be operated under a service contract. This will enable WMCA to contractualise elements of service operation, customer contact and data provision, which are currently solely within the gift of the bus operators. Franchising will give WMCA the opportunity to contractualise elements of the service provision that would support the improvement in RTI. Communities losing spaces such as parks and libraries. Loss of social and recreational spaces highest in most deprived neighbourhoods. They offer us an escape from the pressures of life, but a warning was given today that vital community spaces are under a threat. Almost half of people in the UK have lost access to spaces such as parks, social clubs, libraries, in post offices since 2023, research suggests. The anti-poverty charity Trussell, which operates across the West Midlands, has warned that the loss of social and recreational spaces are highest in the most deprived neighbourhoods across the UK. The research is revealed as the charity prepares to unveil its Together Garden at the Royal Holt Cultural Society's RHS Chelsea Flower Show next week, which aims to highlight the power of community and people working together. The garden, designed by Rob Hardy and funded by the Project Giving Back, will be relocated to Strabane Food Bank in Northern Ireland after the show to provide green spaces for one of the most deprived areas in the UK. A survey of 3,280 UK adults by Opinion for Trussell found that 45% of those quizzed had lost access to at least one community space such as a park, social club, library or post office since 2023. The losses are keenest in the most struggling spots in the country, analysts by Trussell shows, with 23% of those in the most deprived areas saying they had lost community centres, halls, pubs or social clubs compared to the 14% of people in the wealthiest areas. 14% of the most deprived areas reported losing sports, leisure and outdoor facilities compared to 10% of people in the least deprived areas. This is despite 24% of those in the most deprived areas saying the local facilities had helped them access, advise and support on social security and money matters twice as many as the 12% who said the same in the least deprived areas in the country. Twice as many people, that's 10% in the poorest areas, said they had little or no access to community spaces as the 5% who report this issue in the least deprived areas. Two-fifths or 39% of parents in the most deprived areas said that the loss of community and spaces had a negative impact on their children's development, and 16% of people on the lowest incomes reported being often or always lonely, both far higher than levels in wealthy areas and for those on higher incomes. Trussell said that hundreds of food banks in the nationwide community provided more than 2.6 million emergency food parcels to those facing hunger last year, but also emotional support and advice on services. Matthew van Duivenbode, co-chief executive at Trussell, said it's really concerning to find that almost half communities across the UK are losing vital places and spaces to come together. We all need community spaces to connect and to stay well, particularly when we're struggling in life. But our research highlights that these spaces are particularly at risk where they are needed the most. The Chelsea Garden focuses on togetherness, reflecting the power of community and representing hundreds of people from local services, schools, volunteers and members of the public who come together to support each food bank. The charity said that Mr. van Duivenbode, "We're pleased and proud that our Chelsea Together Garden will be taken to Strabane Food Bank to help enrich the community there for years to come." He said that whilst food banks are a lifeline, they're not the solution to hunger, adding that our gardens tell the story of how we will end hunger in the UK together with everyone playing their part. The garden features intersecting paths, timber frames and support one another, a water feature that drains at the pull of a lever to unlock more seating for a larger group to gather, and planting in a rich mixture of colours and textures. Designer Mr. Hardy, and after volunteering in local food banks, I was so motivated by the incredible communities coming together to support one another. It inspired me to approach Trussell to create a garden that showcased togetherness. The planting in the garden reflects the warmth and generosity found in real spaces of support and shows how together we can end hunger. Imagine the Black Country without Dartmouth Park or East Park, or Shropshire without its quarry or Telford Town Park. Green space is at a premium. That is particularly true in urban areas where there is a real need to escape the pressures of everyday life. Today, a report says almost half the people in the UK have lost access to spaces such as parks in recent years. The same goes for other means of gathering as a community, such as social clubs, libraries or post offices. Anti-poverty charity Trussell, which operates across the West Midlands, has warned that the loss of social and recreational spaces are highest in the most deprived neighbourhoods across the UK. As the rush to build homes continues, the fear is the loss of valuable assets will go on. Defendant sorry at actions that led to death of victim. Driver tells murder trial jury he was disgusted and embarrassed by his behaviour. This story is brought to you by Deborah Hardiman. A 32-year-old West Bromwich man accused of murder told a court he felt disgusted and embarrassed by his behaviour. The body of sex worker Shara Miller was found on the pavement in Woodbourne Road, Smethwick, shortly after 6:10 a.m. on August 11th last year. Giving evidence at the witness stand in his trial in Wolverhampton Crown Court, defendant Tanveer Singh said in a yelp noise captured by CCTV audio, whilst the alleged victim was with him in the back of the parcel van he had driven, was made when she tripped and fell over. The footage of the Mercedes Sprinter parked up near industrial units, along with the audio track, was played in court yesterday. The jury was also shown photographs of the interior of the vehicle, which had been fitted with an automatic switch-off lighting system. Defence counsel Mr. Gurdeep Garcher KC asked Singh, "We can hear what the police officers described as shouting and someone shouting, 'Ow, who was making that noise?'" Singh, 32, replied, "Mrs. Miller, the lights had gone off in the back of the van. There was a step and a gap. She tripped and fell over the wheel arch. That's when she shouted out." He said the thudding noise, which could also be heard, was caused by a goods trolley toppling over. He denied he'd been assaulting or beating the woman. He said that he'd picked up the 41-year-old. They agreed he could place his hands on her neck and apply pressure, and she would do the same to him. Singh, who grew up in Norfolk, said that he panicked when he realised Mrs. Miller was not breathing. "I was saying, 'Hello, wake up.' I was tapping her face and I shook her body. I got no response and I couldn't feel a pulse. I thought she'd passed away. I felt scared and I panicked. I felt scared that someone had died as a result of my actions, and I didn't call for an ambulance because I was scared of being caught by the police. I thought I'd be misunderstood and that I was embarrassed. It was disgusting, vile behaviour, and I'm sorry that I did that." Singh said he poured a liquid engine additive over her body to get rid of any forensic links to him, before picking her up in his arms and dropping her from knee height to the ground. Singh also told the court that he took the £50 note that he had given her out of her black bag because he did not want anything of hers to be tied to him. "I thought my DNA and fingerprints would all be over the notes and on her body," he said. He said that he had not considered that the van could be traced to him. Singh told the jury he accepted that Miss Miller died by his hand, but he did not intend to kill her or cause her any really serious harm or any harm at all. He also told the jury that he had drunk rum and coke and had taken cocaine in the hours leading up to the incident. Mrs. Miller, originally from Lincolnshire, had been strangled and her injuries included a number of neck fractures and bruises consistent with the impact of a hard service. Singh denies murder. The trial continues.
Hi, this is Debbie with some articles from the Express and Star from the 14th of May. Angry Baggies Will Not Appeal by Lewis Cox. Albion will not appeal their 2-point penalty following a financial breach, but underlined their frustration at grossly unfair verdicts. The Baggies were hit with a deduction on April the 24th on the eve of the penultimate match of the Championship season, which placed their second-tier status back under threat. A charge of breaching profit and sustainability (PSR) regulations from the English Football League was upheld by an independent commission less than 24 hours after a two-day hearing. Albion were extremely dissatisfied with the outcome, as well as the timing, and maintained their innocence. The club, who survived relegation by 4 points, confirmed they will not appeal the sanction, as a punishment did not affect the final standing and will not serve a practical purpose for the club or its supporters. Albion's breach was confirmed as £1,969,893, the smallest recorded in the Championship or Premiership or Premier League. It centred around ad-backs for community development expenditure, the club's support of its Albion Foundation charity partner. The Baggies argue, having received clarity on community development funding in 2024, the EFL's Club Financial Reporting Unit was not entitled to change the approach for 2025. A statement read, "The 2024 decision was relied upon by the club in its future planning and expenditure, and the club considers it grossly unfair for the CFRU to retrospectively disallow CDE that had previously been permitted. Without that change of approach, the club would not have breached PSR." Battery Farm HMO approved following appeal. A planning inspector has overruled a decision to reject an HMO-branded a battery farm that would add to a town's rat problem. Sandwell Council's Planning Committee refused an application for an 11-bed house of multiple occupation, HMO, above Viney's Opticians in Smithwick High Street last year, amid a warning that allowing the shared accommodation was turning parts of the borough into slums. Residents and local councillors said Smithwick High Street was already suffering from overflowing bins, fly-tipping, rats and other vermin, and blocked drains from several takeaways along the busy route. However, the decision was overruled by a government planning inspector who said the HMO would provide suitable living conditions despite not having a communal living area. The building's 2 shared kitchens would count as the main living space, the inspector's report said, and would fall below the minimum space standard. But the inspector said this was acceptable as the HMO's bedrooms were above the required 10 square metre size. Councillor Bob Piper, who at the time represented Abbey Ward, said the influx of HMOs was turning the borough's high streets into slums. He had said, "We wouldn't put battery hens in places like this." Police praise victim's bravery after teenage rapist locked up. Woman attacked after asking to use toilet in shop commended for courage by Isabella Bonham. Police have praised the bravery and courage of a woman who was raped by a teenage asylum seeker. Police said the woman's support in their investigation resulted in her attacker, Hotak Wahidullah, being jailed for 10 years. The 24-year-old woman had gone into a shop on Wednesbury High Street on February 27th last year, after a night out with a male friend to buy a vape and asked to use the toilet. But once she was in the toilet, Wahidullah, who'd been serving behind the shop counter, raped her. Wahidullah, now aged 18, was 17 at the time of the attack. Wahidullah was arrested a day later on suspicion of rape, which he denied. But he was identified by the victim in an identity parade in March, which was called after DNA evidence was found on her clothing. He was convicted by jury at Birmingham Crown Court on 2 counts of rape on February the 19th, and last week was sentenced to 7 years at a young offenders and 3 years on licence. The court heard Wahidullah of Douglas Road in Birmingham had entered the country from Afghanistan in 2023 but had failed to gain asylum. Prosecutors believed he was 26, but a document from the Ministry of Interior Affairs in Afghanistan backed up Hotak's claim that his date of birth was September the 8th, 2007. An emotional victim personal statement from the victim read out in court heard how her life had changed in every way since the attack. She said she still struggled to sleep, feels numb, and no longer wished to speak to people or go out socially. The victim said she went through painful and upsetting examinations after the attack that she described as degrading and embarrassing and was subsequently prescribed antidepressants by her GP. In the statement read out by prosecuting counsel Simon Phillips, she said, I feel more scared around all men now. I am a gay woman and have very little experience with men sexually, and this is why the assault was so devastating and upsetting for me. Since it happened, I have just wanted to stay in my room in bed. I find it hard to get undressed and sleep mainly in my clothes. Her mother said, he is devastated and messed her life up. PC Precious Harris said, specialist officers within West Midlands Police worked alongside the Crown Prosecution Service on this case, which has rightly resulted in a 10-year sentence for the offender. The victim was supported by family, friends and police partner agencies throughout the investigation and trial. It's the victim's bravery and courage in reporting this matter to the police and giving her evidence at court that has ultimately led to her receiving the justice and closure that she so truly deserves. If you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we are here to listen. We have a team of dedicated officers who are committed to intervening in sexual offences and ensuring the best possible outcome for all victims. Please do come forward. If this story has had an impact on you, there is help, advice and support on the West Midlands Police website. Reform group leader pledge on taking charge of council. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph showing an elderly man with white hair and a moustache wearing a grey suit and a Reform rosette with a thumbs up. And the caption reads, Ray Nock, leader of Sandwell Reform, who have taken control of Sandwell Council from Labour. The article is written by Isabella Bonham. Reform's Ray Nock will be elected leader of Sandwell Council at the next full council meeting. The next council meeting is due to take place on May the 26th. Since the formation of Sandwell Council, Labour has held power in all but one of 52 years. However, that changed last Thursday in one dramatic day of counting during the local election results. The final result gave Reform 41 seats and an outright majority. Labour secured 28 seats and the Green Party 2. There was one independent, while the Conservatives did not win a single seat. Speaking to the Express and Star after the results were announced, Reform UK group leader, Councillor Nock, said he was thrilled with the result and pledged to get Sandwell working again. He said, we're going to turn the ship around. I have been working so hard for the past 3 years to put all this together, so it's now a proud moment. He repeated his promise to reintroduce free parking on council car parks, a measure which he said would be in place within weeks. He also sent his commiserations and best wishes to outgoing council leader, Labour's Kerry Carmichael, who lost a seat to Reform. Councillor Nock said, I've known Kerry for a long time and I feel for her. I know what it's like. I went through it when I lost my seat in 2012. I wish her all the best. The only time Labour has failed to be in control of the council was from May 1978, when it was run by the Conservatives. Labour retook it the following year and has held it with little difficulty ever since. Throughout the Conservative landslides of the 1980s, the council remained solidly red. While the Iraq War, the 2008 recession and the election of a handful of BNP councillors loosened its grip in the 2000s, its dominance never looked in any real danger. And before this election, the party held 63 of the council's 72 seats, with the opposition Tories being able to muster just 4 councillors in reply. Miss Carmichael said she was looking forward to taking a break from politics after losing her seat, saying she was proud of her 4 years in charge of the authority. She said, I'm leaving with my head held high. I spent the last 4 years working really hard to turn this council around. I think I've done that and left it in good shape for someone else. I hope they don't mess it up, she said. On this day, May the 14th, 1610, Henry IV of France, good King Henry, was murdered by a mad monk in Paris. 1643, Louis XIV became King of France at the age of 4 years, 231 days, and reigned for more than 72 years. 1727, artist Thomas Gainsborough was born in Sudbury, Suffolk. 1779, The Oaks was first run at Epsom. 1796, Edward Jenner made his first vaccination against smallpox and laid the foundation for modern immunology. 1811, Paraguay proclaimed its independence. 1842, the British periodical Illustrated London News was first published. 1921, the British Legion was founded in London and it became the Royal British Legion in 1971. 1948, Israel was established as a Jewish state following the partition of Palestine. 1955, Eastern Bloc countries signed the Warsaw Pact. 1987, American actress Rita Hayworth died. On this day last year, football pundit Gary Lineker apologised unreservedly for a social media repost about Zionism, which featured a picture of a rat, saying he would never knowingly share anything anti-Semitic. He later went on to leave his long-running role as host of Match of the Day.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 15th of May. Pick a colour that's on time. Regarding the rebranding of our bus services and the question as to what colour our new buses might be, can I first ask the question, which colour will make our buses run more effectively and get to the stops and the stations on time? Which colour will stop youngsters very kindly sharing their tastes in loud music with the rest of us? And which colour would be the best for curbing bad language? Whatever that colour is, could we have it, please? A little mini comment article written by Alan Jones from Hales Owen. Arrest as stolen car in M6 crash. Written by Isabella Bonham. A man has been arrested after a crash involving a suspected stolen car on the M6. Staffordshire police were called at 4:50 a.m. yesterday after reports of a suspicious vehicle on the M6 northbound between junctions 12 and 13. A car had been stolen in West Bromwich by two men, reportedly with a machete. The owner of the car was unhurt in the robbery. Officers subsequently spotted the blue Audi S3 on the M6. The stolen car was then involved in a collision with a HGV near to Stafford Services, with two men making off from the scene on foot. The driver of the HGV was taken to hospital. West Midlands Ambulance Service said he had sustained injuries not believed to be serious. One man was found and checked over by paramedics before being detained by West Midlands Police a short time later. Firearms officers were sent to the scene, along with a dog unit and the National Police Air Service. Staffordshire Police left the scene at around 9 a.m. The M6 northbound between junctions 14 for Stafford North and 15 for Stoke-on-Trent South was closed for a period of time. Staffordshire Police said its inquiries are ongoing and urges anyone with information to come forward. The force said, "Our inquiries are continuing and anyone with relevant information or dashcam footage should call us on 101 quoting incident number 69 of May 14. To report anonymously, call Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. Music fans in for a treat as new studio opens its doors. Written by Beverly Rademacher, business editor. A former chart star who co-founded British indie rock band Pop Will Eat Itself will throw open the doors to his new analogue recording studio in Sandwell with a series of events tomorrow. Richard March, a founding member of the Poppies, runs RPM Audio, one of the UK's best-kept secrets for music fans and audiophiles, in Burwood. RPM has become a respected vintage, retro and classic audio home listening equipment dealer, and now Richard is adding to the venture with a fully equipped analogue recording studio in the prominent three-storey Edwardian landmark building, 487 Burwood Road. To celebrate the opening of RPM Studios and Richard's 40-year anniversary of working in the music industry, a programme of events will take place hourly, from midday, including an official opening event, live music performances and DJ sets. Richard said, "We are really proud and excited to open the final stage of the project." The opening marks 40 years since PUWEI launched their career with the self-financed single The Poppies Say Grrr on their own label and performed their first gig at legendary Dudley Club JB's. The band, which found chart success in the late 80s and early 90s, along with fellow Stourbridge acts The Wonder Stuff and Ned's Atomic Dustbin, had multiple UK top 40 singles and a top 10 hit, Get the Girl, Kill the Baddies. Richard was particularly associated with PWEI's technological and sampling direction, helping push their shift toward electronic and industrial influenced sound. He told the Express and Star, "We released 6 albums over a 10-year period and toured all over the world, in Japan and Australia, America, all over Europe. I've had a fantastic opportunity to create music and been lucky enough to have a global audience for that. I set up my own business, initially as a retailer of vintage hi-fi and audio equipment, and after a couple of years, the business expanded to such a point that we outgrew our original premises. It almost became dangerous, the amount of equipment we'd accumulated piled up everywhere, and the opportunity arose for me to take on the lease of our current building. The new recording facility, RPM Studios, will be the final addition to the venture, which features an extensive hi-fi speaker and amplifier retail offering, and an audio equipment repair service, pre-loved vinyl outlet RPM Records, intimate cafe venue Blue Room, the Stair Gallery exhibition space, and micro bakery Loaf Actually. The idea of the studio is it's completely analogue, said Richard, a music lecturer at Hales Owen College. It's an opportunity for people to take a different approach to music production. Alongside this article is a picture of Richard March sat at his studio desk. It is a desk as wide as the room, it seems, with lots of different mixing buttons, slides, knobs, wires, and a hugely expansive desk with a big microphone in the middle. Richard is sat on a chair in front of it. He is wearing a red and white gingham shirt and a grey blazer. He has glasses with a yellow tint and has long grey curly hair. It's captioned, "Richard March will officially open RPM Studios tomorrow and celebrate 40 years in the music industry." "Prince of Wales is a genuine villain," says football commentator. Written by Sapphire Hope. Commentator Clive Tealsdale has said there is nothing manufactured about the Prince of Wales's love for his football team, Aston Villa, adding it's clearly a passion of his. Speaking at an investiture at Windsor Castle, the sports commentator said that William's support for the Premier League side is a genuine link between the royal family and the national sport. He added there is nothing manufactured about his love for his football team. He is not a supporter of the most famous club in the country. He's a supporter of a team that's had its highs and lows and is just about to enjoy, hopefully, a wonderful high next week. The Prince was seen punching the air in delight as Villa beat Nottingham Forest 4-0 at Villa Park to reach their first major European final since 1982. They will play German team Freiburg in Istanbul next Wednesday. Mr. Tealsdale said he felt very proud and very humbled at being made a CBE by the Prince of Wales for services to sports broadcasting and to charity. He said, "It is genuinely the job that I always wanted to do, and I got a new opportunity straight from university to join a radio station as a runner. The first thing that I did was host a late night rock show, but I always wanted to work in and around football." Mr. Tealsdale said William spoke to him about Aston Villa during the investiture ceremony, adding, "You would be surprised if he didn't." He said, "Part of me would have loved to have told the King how impressed I was by his speech to Congress a couple of weeks ago, but I was relayed that to the Prince, and it was nice to talk some football with him." When asked if VAR poses a problem for commentators, Mr. Tealsdale replied, "I think all commentators' problems are first world problems. They might complicate our life, but they don't make the job anything other than what it is, which is the job that I have always wanted to do." He did, however, say that changing the laws of the game to accommodate VAR is, for me, a little blinkered. "Here we are stressing over the minutiae of handball decisions at an elite level and forgetting the fact that the beauty of the game is that everybody plays it," he said. Also in attendance at Wednesday's investiture was Kerry Davis, the first black woman to play for the England women's football team, who was honoured with an MBE for services to association football and diversity in sport. She said that she spoke to the Prince of Wales about Princess Charlotte playing football. "When I was at school, it was netball, rounders. There was no football," she added. Making her debut in September 1982, she scored 43 goals in 90 games over a 16-year international career, including the European Championships in 1984 and the 1995 World Cup. alongside this article is a picture of the Prince of Wales in the villa stands. He is stood with someone else. He is wearing a navy blue coat and a blue jumper, and he is seen smiling and pointing at the pitch. It's captioned, "The Prince of Wales was in the stands to see Villa secure their place in next week's Europa League final."
Hello, this is Sarbjit with your news from the Express and Star, Saturday, 16 May. Delivery driver found guilty of murdering sex worker in van. Jury deliberates for more than 4 hours to convict man of killing 41-year-old. By Deborah Hardiman, Chief Reporter. A delivery driver from West Bromwich has been found guilty of the murder of a sex worker in a unanimous verdict. Tanveer Singh, 32, of Leopards Lane, choked the victim, Shara Miller, before dumping her body on a pavement in Woodburn Road on the Handsworth-Smethwick boundary in the early hours of August 11 last year. He claimed she had agreed to let him apply pressure to her neck and had tripped over in the van, resulting in her sustaining injuries to her head and face, along with neck fractures. But the jury did not believe him and, after deliberating for just over 4 hours, found him guilty of murdering the 41-year-old, who was originally from Lincolnshire, in the van. Judge Michael Chambers, KC, told Wolverhampton Crown Court it had been a short but troublesome trial and had no thought so far about what the length of the jail sentence should be. "This is a particularly tragic case of a needless loss of life of a vulnerable person who had difficulties," he said. He told the jurors, "It has not been the longest case that we've had to deal with in Wolverhampton. However, every case is important for all involved. Whatever happens relating to the jury proposals, and I take no view on that, cases will continue to be tried by jurors. Juries serve a very important and interesting role." He also told them they were welcome to return to observe the Singh's sentencing exercise. He told Singh, "The sentence for murder is life imprisonment, and that is fixed by Parliament. I will set the minimum term that you will serve, but the parole board will consider when your release should be. You will be sentenced on May 27. In the meantime, you must remain in custody." Court told three accused in drug dealing trial will not give evidence. Three men accused of drug dealing to the tune of thousands of pounds will not be giving evidence in their own Crown Court trial. Adam Lickett, 19, Asad Khan, 23, and Yakuba Sawane, 19, are on trial over a supply ring allegedly operating in Sandwell. They were arrested after police seized crack cocaine and heroin wraps with an estimated street value of more than £3,000 last year. Prosecuting junior Ms. Mia McNeefin told Wolverhampton Crown Court that among the items confiscated on December 12 in Beaches Road, Oldbury, were 111 heroin wraps worth £1,110 and 109 crack cocaine wraps worth £1,090. She said the next day, 114 crack cocaine cigarettes worth £1,140 were found in a silver Honda. The jury heard fingerprints found on a bag containing Class A drugs belonged to Sawane and a red Mitsubishi stolen in Newell Road, Rowley Regis, in November 2023 and recovered in Perry Bar was traced to the defendants. Lickett of Middlemore Road, West Bromwich, denies possessing cocaine and heroin with intent to supply, possessing a firearm with intent to endanger life, wounding and driving a conveyance without authority. Khan of Lones Road, West Bromwich, denies possessing a firearm with intent to endanger life, allowing himself to be carried in a conveyance
taken without authority, and possessing cocaine. Sawana, of no fixed abode, denies possessing with intent to supply. The defendant's barristers said none would take the stand. The trial continues. Man's body found in M54 Woodland by Dominic Robertson. There is a picture of the M54, which was closed while police carried out investigations into the crash that left one man dead in the early hours. One man died on the M54 and another was found with life-threatening injuries in the Black Country after a horror crash on the M54. The road was closed in the early hours of yesterday after the incident on the eastbound carriageway between junctions 3 for Albrighton and 2 for Wolverhampton. It has since been reopened. Police said a man, thought to be in his 20s, was found dead in an Astra at the scene, while another man was seriously injured. Officers are appealing for witnesses. They said that they had been alerted to the incident when West Midlands police informed them a man had been taken to hospital with serious injuries from a property in Smethwick, after reportedly being involved in a crash on the M54. Staffordshire police officers then carried out a search and made the discovery in the Astra found in Woodland by the M54. A spokesman said, "We are appealing for information after a man died and another man was seriously injured following a collision on the eastbound M54. We were called by officers at West Midlands Police in the early hours following reports of a man being taken to hospital by ambulance from an address in Smethwick with serious injuries after reportedly being involved in a collision on the M54 in the South Staffordshire area. The man, in his late teens, suffered potentially life-threatening injuries and remains in hospital. Officers from West Mercia Police carried out a search and a black Vauxhall Astra vehicle was found in Woodland near the M54 eastbound between junctions 3 and 2 between the Staffordshire border. A man, believed to be in his 20s, was found in the vehicle and pronounced dead a short time later. A police spokesman urged people with information to contact them, saying, "Anyone with information or relevant dash cam footage should call us on 101, use live chat on our website, or email collision investigators directly at ciu@staffordshire.police.uk, quoting incident number 58 of May 15. To report anonymously, call Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. A West Midlands Ambulance Service spokesman said, "On arrival, there was one patient, a man. Sadly, it quickly became apparent nothing could be done to save him, and he was confirmed dead at the scene. Earlier in the morning, we had been called to an address in Smethwick to treat a man for serious injuries who had reportedly been involved in a RTC on the M54. He was taken to Queen Elizabeth Hospital, Birmingham, for further assessment." Five things we love this week. Number one, archaeologists have discovered evidence suggesting a stone bothy in the Highlands was secretly used to illicitly distill whiskey around 2 centuries ago. The team have discovered a piece of a copper still at the site in Ben Lawes National Nature Reserve, known as NNR, as well as a well-constructed hearth and evidence of burning. After unlicensed private distillation was declared illegal in the late 1780s, many distillers and smugglers went to great lengths to evade detection by excise officers. Some moved their operations to hidden bothies in upland areas to avoid being found, with 5 known illicit whiskey bothies on the Ben Lawes NNR, which is cared for by the National Trust for Scotland. Number 2. A sloth has been born in Scotland for the first time and has been named in honour of Sir David Attenborough. The Lynn's two-toed sloth emerged at the Royal Zoological Society of Scotland's, known as RZSS, Edinburgh Zoo on Monday, May 11. He will spend the first 6 months of his life gripping tightly onto the stomach of his mother, Fiera, who is a first-time parent. Keepers have named the baby Atty in honour of Sir David Attenborough, who celebrated his 100th birthday on May 8. It is a nod to the moment Sir David chose the sloth when asked which animal he would like to be for the day. Jess Brown, head keeper at the zoo, said, "We can't wait for visitors to see little Atty." Number 3. A woman who has celebrated her 105th birthday said the secret to a long life is a good cup of tea with friends. Margaret Blair lives at Erskine Veterans Charity's McKellar House care home in Bishopton and celebrated her birthday on Tuesday with friends and family. During the Second World War, she was an overseer at the Blackburn Aircraft Factory in Dumbarton, where Sunderland flying boats were created for UK forces. In 1941, she enlisted in the Women's Land Army. On Tuesday, she received a second royal birthday card with a message from the King and Queen after getting another on her 100th. The centenarian has never been a drinker or a smoker and says the simple things in life like a good cup of tea, home-cooked meals and good company are key to happiness and a long life. Number 4. A new mural has been created near the late Eric Morecambe's birthplace to mark 100 years since he was born. The comedian was born in Morecambe, Lancashire, on May 14, 1926, and a series of events are being held in the town to celebrate what would have been his 100th birthday. The mural has been created on the side of the former Hitchens building and features Morecambe alongside his comedy partner Ernie Wise. The image was inspired by a classic archive picture from a vintage Radio Times listing. The pair's comedy partnership lasted until Morecambe's sudden death in 1984 at the age of 58. Wise lived until 1999. Morecambe was originally called John Eric Bartholomew, but he changed his name in honour of his hometown. Further events and activities are expected to take place throughout the year. Number 5. An indoor-only cat who slipped outside the house travelled 15 miles after hitching a ride underneath a neighbour's car was reunited with his owner thanks to his microchip. 4-year-old Olaf, described by his owner as a scaredy cat who can be afraid of his own shadow, had been missing from his home in Braintree, Essex, for 4 days when he was seen falling from underneath the neighbour's vehicle as she arrived at work 15 miles away in Dallywood. Ms Harrison, who is deputy manager at the Cats Protection Essex Cat Centre, said Olaf was understandably a bit skittish, but she and colleagues at the centre got him safely into a carrier. Olaf was given a clean bill of health after a vet check.
Hello, this is Jenny. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 18th of May. Is the UK political crisis pushing you into a state of anxiety? Consultant psychiatrist offers advice on coping with a new stress phenomenon. As questions continue to mount over Keir Starmer's future as Prime Minister, experts have highlighted a new issue, political anxiety. The relentless 24-hour news cycle and polarisation on social media can often feel unavoidable, but in times of political uncertainty, it can be helpful to sometimes step back and think about how it might be impacting your well-being. We spoke to Dr. Chetna Kang, consultant psychiatrist at Central Health London, who explained what political anxiety is, identified 6 key signs to look out for, and shared some helpful tips on how to manage and overcome it. He says that the current uncertainty in the country can have a negative impact on some, adding, anxiety lies on a spectrum from general day-to-day worry, which everybody experiences, right through to degrees of anxiety which lead to panic disorder or symptoms of PTSD. It's essentially concern and worry on the mildest end, and symptoms of a mental health problem on the other end of the spectrum. Therefore, when you affiliate anxiety with a particular trigger, like politics for example, it will be levels of worry that are more than a day-to-day healthy concern that is particularly associated with a political climate. When the trigger is political, then we call it political anxiety, although political anxiety is not a diagnosis in itself. Anxiety can have a big impact on your daily life and for those around you, so here are some of the common signs to look out for. Number 1. Pervasive thoughts. If you are experiencing political anxiety, it is likely that your thoughts about the concern are pervasive, says Kang. While getting on with your day-to-day life, your mind might be constantly ruminating about or feeling anxious about in the background about whatever political threat you're worried about. Number 2. Feelings of helplessness. Politics can often feel far removed, and when our minds go into a topic which feels outside of our circle of influence, it can increase the feeling of helplessness, says Kang. Number 3. Difficulty concentrating. Your mind and thoughts might drift off to either the country where the political event is happening or the future that you've created in your mind, says Kang. Number 4. Mood changes. Anxiety is an emotional and behavioural response to a threat, and you may find yourself becoming more and more irritable, says Kang. Number 5. Struggling to sleep. You might not be able to switch off at night and struggle to sleep, because when we're stressed and feel threatened, we feel like we need to be on high alert, says Kang. This can create a vicious cycle, because as well as the anxiety itself affecting your cognition, immunity, your health, then the lack of sleep perpetuates this and makes it worse. Number 6. Headaches. Your body will talk to you in different ways to tell you something's not right. And some people will experience headaches when they are feeling anxious or stressed, says Kang. But help is at hand. If all of this rings a bell with you, here are some top tips. Focus on what you can change. If our focus remains on areas which are out of our reach, we will stay in a helpless state. But bringing the focus back to what we can change can help us feel empowered, because when we take action and see results, it gives us confidence. Move your body. Anything that gets your body moving can help move your mind away from the future or the past that you're dwelling on. Exercise naturally releases tension. Try yoga or breathing exercises too. And don't doom scroll. Analyse what your peak doom scrolling times are in the day. Try to steal back short blocks of time or avoid looking for a while. And finally, talk to loved ones or seek GP help. The best advice of all. Confide in someone that you trust and talk to them, and seek help from a GP if you really are struggling. The colour purple comes out top in poll on future of buses. Around 1,300 votes cast for the way forward ahead of region's transport shake-up. An article by Mark Drew. The results are in, and the bus travelling public of the West Midlands have plumped for purple. We set up a survey with 6 possible colours as the West Midlands bus fleet prepares to come under a single branding scheme. Around 1,300 of you took part in just a few days, and the survey overwhelmingly backed the idea of buses across our region taking on a purple livery. This will be good news for West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker, who is believed to favour a shade of purple because it has no links to any of the region's football clubs. Mr. Parker plans to bring the region's bus services back under public control through a rail-style franchise system, similar to the B bus network in Manchester. The B network has a distinctive yellow colour scheme, making its buses instantly recognisable. While buses will continue to be run by private operators in the West Midlands, fares, timetables and routes will be set by Transport for West Midlands, and they will run under a uniform Transport for West Midlands branding. Mr. Parker invited Express and Star readers to have their say on what livery the new bus services should carry, with 6 suggestions given. Almost 6 in 10 of the votes cast went for purple, a total of just under 700. Grey, which is currently used for many services, came in second at 19%. Wolf-style golden black only brought in 11%, a surprisingly low score, but maybe one that reflects a disappointing season at the Molyneux. That left green, red and dark blue also trailing behind the rest. No decision has yet been made, but Mr. Parker has pledged to listen to readers' idea on which colour scheme should be adopted. Sources inside Transport for West Midlands, the Transport Division of West Midlands Combined Authority, says purple is the early front runner. At the moment, individual bus operators in the region use their own different liveries. The majority of services are run by National Express West Midlands, which employs 2 colour schemes, crimson with a gold trim for the regular buses and dark grey with a red detailing for the premium platinum buses. Diamond Buses, which runs the 27 Dudley to Wolverhampton service, has a royal blue livery. Under the proposed shake-up, the first franchises in Walsall, Coventry and the north and east of Birmingham are expected to launch in autumn next year. A second phase covering Dudley, Sandwell and Wolverhampton will be launched in summer 2028, with the final franchises in Solihull, Southern and West Birmingham in spring 2029. Under the scheme, West Midlands Combined Authority, a consortium made up of Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall, Wolverhampton, Birmingham, Coventry and Solihull councils, will buy up the region's bus depots at a cost of £50 million. The idea is that this will make for a more competitive market, as bus operators will not need to find the upfront investment for operating their own depots. The Combined Authority already owns Walsall Bus Depot in Carl Street and is seeking to buy Wolverhampton Depot in Park Lane, Fallings Park, Dudley Depot on the Pensnet Industrial Estate and West Bromwich Depot in Oak Lane. The authority says the scheme will be self-financing, as bus operators will be asked to pay rental to use the depots. Mr. Parker said the Combined Authority was currently subsidising private bus operators to the tune of £50 million a year, a position which was unsustainable. He hopes the new uniform colour scheme will bring an identity to the buses and encourage more people to use them. Up until 1969, bus services were largely run by local council transport departments, each of which had their own liveries. Wolverhampton had its distinctive green and yellow buses, while West Bromwich buses were navy blue and cream. Walsall also had a predominantly blue livery. Albion roll the dice on Duo, but departure calls are correct. An article by Lewis Cox. Albion's summer retained list of 2026 was always going to divide opinions. Taking goalkeepers Max O'Leary and Joe Wildsmith out of the equation, deciding on the fate of 4 experienced attackers led to interesting debates. You could ask 50 Albion fans their thoughts on the future of Jed Wallace, Daryl Dyke, Carlin Grant and Josh Mayer, and you might get 50 different opinions. I was fairly vocal with my feelings that all 4 could quite easily have been released from the Hawthorns. I think, were Ian Pearce or James Morrison, it would have been a decision that I would have made. But playing a game of FIFA or Football Manager is different from real life, and Albion's decision makers have made their call, with Wallace and Dyke out of the exit door. The Baggies offered a new deal to Mayer and continued dialogue with Grant. Mayer and Grant were 2 reasonable earners at the Hawthorns, and a new offer for the former and any prospective proposal to the latter will be on reduced terms, as has been the club's operation since Bickle's takeover 2 years ago. Both, as far as age goes, are in the peak years of their careers, with Mayer 27 and Grant 28. Both have commanded interest previously, and both may think they have showed in spells with Albion they can cut it at the level or an equivalent elsewhere. Wallace and Dyke were different considerations. Wallace recently turned 32 and is in the twilight of his career. He checked in as a 28-year-old 4 years ago on big money, and it has not gone as either party would have hoped. That is not to say Wallace has not been a fine captain. The winger is an excellent clubman and has been a highly respected figure off the field despite spending half of his 4 years kicking his heels in frustration. Wallace showed in recent months he still has quality left in the tank, but is the right time for him to excel elsewhere. When it comes to Dyke, still young at 25, there is just too much risk. Albion have been unable to rely on the striker due to a string of lengthy injury issues, and rewarding that with another deal does not make business sense. Yes, perhaps a pay-as-you-play deal or significantly reduced terms could have been considered, but Dyke will still back himself to shine elsewhere. Albion have rolled the dice on Mayer and Grant. The former, when fit at the races mentally, is a class act at championship level. Ability-wise, he is one of the best in Albion's squad, and the first half of last season proved it. Albion just haven't seen that class much since. Boss Morrison is a fan, though, and Mayer scored 3 big goals in the survival push. If tuned in, he can be an asset. Grant is in dialogue, and it will be interesting to see how the vagaries of that progress. He is another who divides opinion, but is respected behind the scenes. Nurses trying to stay safe on shift for patients. Nurses have said they are just trying to stay safe, to get through shifts without patients coming to harm, amid warnings of a deadly mix of increasingly complex care and widespread vacancies in the profession. Professor Nicola Ranger, General Secretary and Chief Executive of the Royal College of Nursing, the RCN, will say that the government is failing in the most basic task of keeping citizens alive as the union's annual congress gets underway in Liverpool today. The RCN surveyed more than 13,000 nursing staff about their experiences on their most recent shift. More than three quarters, 79%, told the union that clinical complexity has increased in the last 2 years, with 1 in 10 saying staffing is at the right level to meet the patient's needs. More than two-thirds, 69%, said the situation is forcing them to make tough decisions on prioritising care. According to the RCN, the rate of growth in the doctor workforce has been 51% higher than that of registered nurses. Its analysis also claims that growth of the registered nursing workforce has reached an 8-year low in England. One nurse working on an acute adult ward in an NHS hospital told the RCN that care has disappeared in nursing.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is the Wharfdale Talking News, with a selection of audio-described TV programmes from the main channels, starting Saturday the 23rd of May until Friday the 30th of May 2026. Compiled and read by Glenys. Saturday 23rd of May, BBC One. At 12 noon there's St Denis Medical, where the nurses threaten a walkout. From 12:25, there's two episodes of Smoggy Queens, followed at 1:15pm by Bargain Hunt, which is in Nottinghamshire. At 4:10, there's the film Shrek, an animated comedy about a reclusive green ogre. In Casualty at 8, Stevie discovers that Matty covered for her mistake. And from 9, there's the first two episodes of a new drama, 2 weeks in August. On BBC Two, at 11:20, there's the film My Week with Marilyn, a young film assistant's brief relationship with Marilyn Monroe. On ITV, at 12:40pm, James Martin's American Adventure continues in Austin, Texas. Bullseye for Soccer Aid is on at 5:00 to 6:00, a Soccer Aid special of the classic darts game show. And at 9, There's Nobody's Fool, a strategic reality quiz game. Now to Channel 4. From 6 a.m. there are 4 episodes of The King of Queens, followed at 7:40 by 3 episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond. 3 episodes of Frasier follow from 9:30 a.m. And from 11, there are 4 episodes of The Simpsons. On to 3:35 p.m. when there's Jamie's Ultimate Barbecue. Jamie's making a wood-kissed sesame chicken burger, veggie mezzi and surf and turf mixed grill. At 7, Steam Train Diaries is on the Levisham to Pickering line. At 8, there's the world's most secret hotels, ranging from Arizona to Poland. At 9, there's the film The Equalizer 3, with Denzel Washington tackling the mob in Italy. And the evening rounds off at 10:10 with the film Dante's Peak, where guests at a volcano-side hotel unwisely ignore a scientist's advice. And on Channel 5, where at 8:35 a.m, there's The Creature Cases. On Sunday, 24th of May, on BBC One, at 11:30 a.m, Homes Under the Hammer, a young couple buy their first home in Haydock. At 2:05, Ben Fogle presents an appeal on behalf of hearing dogs for deaf people. At 2:40, there's The Americas, The Wild West, where survival demands grit and adaptability. From 3:25, there's the film Minions, The Rise of Gru. At 8:15 p.m, the second episode of Death Valley, where John and Janie come to a small fishing village to investigate the death of a chef. And at 9, in Dear England, Gareth Southgate becomes the new manager of the England team. Programmes on BBC Two start at 11:30 a.m, with Andy Oliver's Fabulous Feasts from Stoke. At 2:15 p.m, there's the film Some Like It Hot. After two men witness a mass murder, they try to hide out in an all-girl jazz band. At 7:15 p.m, Expedition with Steve Backshall searches for the longest lava tube in Arabia. And at 8, in The American Revolution, Lucy Worsley investigates the breakup between Britain and America. Followed at 9 by Scandinavia with Simon Reeve. ITV1. At 1:05, there's the film The Goonies, a cult adventure comedy. At 2:25 p.m, in Love Your Garden, the team builds a modern family garden for a fellow gardener with Alzheimer's. At 5:45, Bullseye for Soccer Aid is a soccer aid special of the classic darts game show. At 7 p.m, Deal or No Deal is for Soccer Aid. And at 8 p.m, there's the 1% Club Kids Special, followed at 9 by 2 episodes of Nobody's Fool. Channel 4. From 5 to 6 a.m, there's 3 episodes of The King of Queens, followed at 7:10 by 3 episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond. And at 1 p.m, there's 2 episodes of The Simpsons. At 4:30, Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It is in Essex. And at 5:35, George Clark's Amazing Spaces has George checking out a home that was once a skip. At 7 p.m, there's The Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer. And at 8, there's Cruising to the Ends of the Earth, featuring Tokyo's Shibuya Crossing and Messina's glittering golden statue of the Madonna. At 9 p.m, there's Vengeance, Murder on the Heath, a tale of young love and ill-conceived revenge. And at 10:05, there's Gogglebox. On 5, there's The Creature Cases at 8:35 a.m. And at 8 p.m, Dogs Behaving Very Badly. Now the listings of those programmes which are on at the same time each day. On BBC One, at 12:15, there's Bargain Hunt. At 2 o'clock, there's Natalie Cassidy, Caring Together. At 7:30, EastEnders. On BBC Two, at 7:30 a.m, Great Continental Railway Journeys. At 2:45 p.m, Under the Vines. Please note that on Friday, this is on BBC One at 2 p.m. And at 6:30 p.m, Great Continental Railway Journeys. On ITV, at 2 o'clock, there's Dickinson's Real Deal. At 8, there's Emma Dale. And at 8:30, Coronation Street. On Channel 4, at 7:45 a.m, Everybody Loves Raymond. Followed at 9:10 by Frasier. At 12:05, Find It, Fix It, Flog It. At 4 p.m, Escape to Florida. Followed at 5 p.m, by Chateau DIY. Monday, 25th of May. On BBC One at 9:30 a.m, there's The Scarecrow's Wedding, followed at 10 a.m. by the film Wallace and Gromit, A Close Shave. At 1:30, there's the episode of Natalie Cassidy, Caring Together, followed at 2 by Robson Green's Weekend Escapes from Bamborough. And at 9, there's Dear England, Can Southgate's Team Triumph at Wembley? On BBC Two at 3:30, we go to Sicily, the wonder of the Mediterranean. At 7, Digging for Britain is from Hadrian's Wall. And at 9, there's episode 2 of Lucy Worsley Investigates the American Revolution. On ITV at 4, Deal or No Deal. At 6:30, The Chase Celebrity Special. At 7:30, we return to the Fletcher's Family Farm. And at 9, there's Nobody's Fool. To Channel 4, where Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It is at 7:30 and from Rushton. Followed at 8 by The Doghouse. At 9, Vengeance, Murder on the Heath continues. Followed at 10 by 2 episodes of Murder of the Essex Boys. Tuesday, 26th of May. On BBC One, you can join Alan Carr for Interior Design Masters at 8. Followed by Who Do You Think You Are at 9. At 10:40, Half Man continues. And the evening rounds off at 11:45 with the romantic drama The Photograph. On BBC Two at 8:30 a.m, there's Lost and Found in the Dales. And at 3:30 p.m, there's a programme about Sicily, the wonder of the Mediterranean. Then on to 11 p.m. with the Elon Musk show, The Next Chapter. On ITV this evening, there's only one programme listed, and it's Soccer Aid, More Than Just a Game, at 9 p.m. Over on Channel 4 at 8, there's Bake Off, The Professionals, with chefs attempting showpieces inspired by childhood toys. Followed at 9 by Falling, and at 10 by 24 Hours in A&E. Now to Channel 5, and at 8 p.m, there's Reuben Owen, Life in the Dales. Wednesday, 27th of May. On BBC One at 8:30 a.m, there's Great Korean Railway Journeys with Michael Portillo. And at 3:30 p.m, there's The Secret Life of Elephants. At 9 p.m, there's the comedy Amanda Land, followed at 9:30 by Only Child. And the evening rounds off at 10:40 with the first episode in Series 2 of The Good Girl's Guide to Murder. On ITV at 7:30, there's For the Love of Dogs with Alison Hammond. And at 9, there's the fifth episode of A Taste for Murder. On Channel 4, there's the fourth episode of Falling, followed at 10:05 by Celebrity Gogglebox. And at 11:05, we have the documentary Inside Thailand's British Drug Gangs. One offering on Channel 5, at 8 p.m, there's Inside the Tower of London. Thursday, 28th of May. On BBC One at 8, there's MasterChef, the second semi-final, followed at 9 by the first in a new series of the documentary Reported Missing. On BBC Two at 3:30 in the afternoon, there's The Secret Lives of Elephants. Then on to 9 p.m, with the first in a four-part series, Putin in 10 Pictures. Over on ITV at 9, there's A Taste for Murder, when a hand is found inside a dead shark. There's a wide variety to watch on Channel 4, starting at 8, with George Clark's Beautiful Builds, helping homeowners in Bromley to design innovative houses, followed at 9 by Taskmaster, with startling things happening to a pineapple and a new take on a nursery rhyme. From 10, there are two episodes of the new series Make That Movie, where ordinary people's ideas are turned into movies. And the evening finishes at 11 with Gogglebox. On Channel 5 at 7, there's Coast Guard Search and Rescue with a helicopter called out in Snowdonia. And at 9, there's the rags to riches story, The Hard Acres. And so to Friday, 29th of May. On BBC One at 3:30, there's The Secret Life of Elephants. In the evening at 8, there's MasterChef. At 9:30, there's Mrs. Brown's Boys. At 10:40, there's St. Denis Medical. And from 10:20, there's two episodes of Smoggy Queens. Over to BBC Two. At 10:50, there's Lifeline, an appeal for hearing dogs for the deaf. And at 7, there's Greatest Gardens with Dermot Gavin and Carol Klein. At 9, there's Hidden Treasures of the National Trust, followed at 10 by Mortimer and Whitehouse Go Fishing. This time they're in Essex. On ITV at 7:30, there's Bradley and Barney Walsh, Breaking Dad. And at 10:45, there's the 1% Club for Soccer Aid. The Channel 4, at 8 p.m, there's Dispatchers, Hunting Britain's Fugitives, followed at 9 by Gogglebox, and at 10 by First Date. The evening rounds off at 11:05 with the film Jojo Rabbit, a satire set in the Second World War. And there's one offering on Channel 5 at 9 p.m, Scotland's Lost Islands with Ben Fogle. So that's my compilation of TV programmes for this week. I hope you find something to entertain you. Goodbye.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, May 23rd. And two notorious spies are the subjects of plays by Alan Bennett, Guy Burgess in An Englishman Abroad and Anthony Blunt in A Question of Arbitration. Both plays can be heard on Radio 4 Extra at 6 o'clock in the morning, 11 a.m. or 5 p.m. Alexander Armstrong celebrates the work of the inimitable P.G. Woodhouse on Radio 4 Extra at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And a performance of Puccini's final opera, Torrando, is on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. On to Sunday, May 24th. The castaway in Desert Island Discs is actress Emily Watson. Radio 4, 10 a.m. An adaptation of Sue Townsend's The Growing Pains of Adrian Mole is on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 in the morning, 12:30 lunchtime or 6:30 p.m. When Shiraz Calls, a personal account of the day-to-day life in Iran, told through the telephone calls by two Iranian sisters, one in the UK, the other in the city of Shiraz. Radio 4, 1:30, after the world at 1. The two top teams go head-to-head in the final of Round Britain Quiz, hosted by Kirsty Lang, on Radio 4 at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. My Sister's Daughter presents the stories of people who unexpectedly took in family members' children. Radio 4, 7:15, Sunday evening. On to programmes then that are broadcast at the same time every day, Monday to Friday. Same time, same radio station, every day of the week. The Lonely Londoners is an account of Caribbean immigrants who, as part of the Windrush generation arriving in Britain in 1948, looked to build new lives for themselves in London. Radio 4 Extra, all week, 8:30 in the morning, 1:30 or 7:30 p.m, Monday to Friday. Detective brings us five thrillers by Ray Barr on Radio 4 Extra, each day this week, 6 a.m, 11 a.m or 5 p.m. The book of the week is Frostlines by Neil Shea, exploring how the Arctic is changing as warming reshapes the planet. Radio 4 for this, 11:45, all week, Monday to Friday. Tick Tock, The Working Week in 5 Days, finds out how the working week looked for most of human history before Henry Ford's introduction of the 40-hour week in 1926. Radio 4, 1:45, all week, Monday to Friday. Composer of the week is the jazz trumpeter, composer and bandleader Miles Davis, to mark the centenary of his birth. Radio 3, 4 o'clock each day this week. Live concerts from the Wigmore Hall to celebrate its 125th anniversary, also taking place all week on Radio 3 at 7:45 in the evening. And Book of Bedtime, this week and next, in fact, is John of John by Douglas Stewart. An art school graduate returns to his home on the island of Harris to face an uncertain future. Radio 4, all week, Monday to Friday, 10:45 p.m. for Book at Bedtime. Back to the individual programmes then to listen to through the week. On Monday, May 25th, which is actually Bank Holiday Monday. Who Cares is the title of a new series from Mary Bork, investigating the social care system. Radio 4, 9:45, Monday morning. It's an episode of Dad's Army on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 noon and 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra. In Great Lives, the subject is Cleopatra, moving on from the image created by Shakespeare and Hollywood and reclaiming her as an astute politician determined to keep Egypt from falling to Rome. Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Monday afternoon. Abandoned on the Strait of Hormuz asks what's happening in a vital shipping lane for the world's oil. Radio 4 for this at 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon. For fans of the panel show, there's an episode of Just a Minute on Radio 4 Extra at 2 in the afternoon, or 8 p.m. if you prefer. And also The Unbelievable Truth, hosted by David Mitchell, in the comedy slot, Radio 4, 6:30 p.m. on Monday. Tuesday, May 26th, the new drama series is a radio adaptation of the award-winning 1996 TV drama Our Friends in the North by Peter Flannery, examining the politics and changes across Britain from the 60s to the 90s, seen through the varying fortunes of four friends. Radio 4, Tuesday afternoon, 2:15. In the series History Heroes, Eileen, Camp Carter Brown and the anti-nuclear campaign, here's how a group of Aboriginal women resisted a nuclear programme that threatened their traditional land in Australia. Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Tuesday afternoon. A Question of Guilt is a radio thriller by Philip Levin, set in 1962. Peter Harris finds himself in prison for killing his landlady, but he swears he's innocent. If he didn't do it, who did? Radio 4 Extra, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or 9 p.m. for some evening drama. L.A., Rising from the Ashes, meets the architects leading LA's recovery from 2025's devastating fires, who are hoping to rebuild in a way that makes the area better prepared for a disaster. Radio 4, 4 o'clock on Tuesday. And In Touch brings us news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, presented by Peter White, as usual. Radio 4, 8:40 p.m. Wednesday, May 27th. In Stella Remington and the Cambridge Spies, the former Director General of MI5 uses the BBC archives to re-examine the impact of the Cambridge Spies both on her life and the establishment. Ready for Extra, Wednesday morning at 10 or 4 p.m. in the afternoon. In The Law Show, the programme asks what exactly the offence misconduct in public office means, for which Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor and Peter Mandelson are both being investigated. Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Wednesday afternoon. Choral Evensong comes from St David's Cathedral on Radio 3 at 3. And The Black Spectacles is a dramatisation of the 1939 whodunit in the Dr Gideon Fell series. It stars Donald Sinden and it's on Radio 4 Extra at 3 o'clock or 9 p.m. Thursday, May 28th. There's Vintage Comedy with an edition of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. There's Vintage Comedy with an edition of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. From 1965. Radio 4 Extra, 7:30 in the morning, 12:30 at lunchtime or 6:30 p.m. In the new series of Toast, the subject is Wilkinson, or Wilco, asking why this successful, privately owned family business faltered during a cost of living crisis when people were looking for value. Radio 4, just after 12:30. In Ramblings, Claire Balding joins the Gallioch 50 Plus Men's Walking Group, offering companionship and conversation to men adjusting to life after retirement, for a stroll through the Vetiner Estate in Aberdeenshire. Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Thursday afternoon. BBC Inside Science brings us the latest scientific research to hit the headlines on Radio 4, 4:30 p.m. And Amal Rajan and guests offer their insights into the biggest news stories of the week. Radical, Radio 4, 11 p.m. on Thursday. Finally, Friday, May 29th, The Lost Cockney Voice. Cole Morton remembers the vanishing voice, half Queen, half Cockney, of his grandmother's wartime generation. Radio 4 Extra, 10:30 a.m. or 4:30, Friday afternoon. There's an episode of Step 2 and Son on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 noon or 6:30 p.m. Gardener's Question Time this week comes from the Chelsea Flower Show, which took place last week. Radio 4 at 3 o'clock, Friday afternoon. The Quest of Donal Q is a comedy drama starring Billy Connolly and Brian Cox as brothers Donal and Sandy, who are on a quest to rescue a childhood sweetheart. Radio 4 Extra, 3 p.m. or 9 p.m. on Friday. Finally, it's been quite the few weeks in the world of politics. So the forum, any questions, comes from St Norbert Community Hall in Spalding to round off your week, Friday, Radio 4, 8 p.m. That's it. Thank you to Wendy for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. News. Question 1. At the BAFTA TV Awards, 16-year-old Owen Cooper became the youngest ever winner of the Best Supporting Actor prize. What hit Netflix drama did he star in? Question 2. What type of animal has been born in Scotland for the first time and is named in honour of Sir David Attenborough? Question 3. Which historic location will the Beatles transform into a 7-floor museum? Sport. Question 4. Who scored Italy's equalising goal in the Euro 2020 final against England at Wembley? Question 5. Where do Scottish Premiership side Aberdeen play their home matches? Remember when? Question 7. Lord Louis Mountbatten was appointed Viceroy of India. Ralph Richardson was knighted. The City of Edinburgh launched an international festival of music and drama. Dennis Compton scored 3,816 runs in one season. But what was the year? Question 7. Australia celebrated its bicentennial. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was indicted on charges of conspiracy to defraud the US government. TV personality Russell Harty died, and Michael Crawford starred in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. But what was the year? Who am I? Question 8. An actress, I was born in Hampstead in 1931. I appeared in sketches featuring Ronnie Corbett and Ronnie Barker. However, the role I am best known for is Hyacinth Bouquet's nervous next-door neighbour, Elizabeth, in the sitcom Keeping Up Appearances. Question 9. A director and fantasy writer, I was born in Liverpool in 1952. Stephen King once called me the future of horror. After being displeased by several film adaptations of my work in the 1980s, I went on to direct the film adaptation of my novel, The Hellbound Heart, which became the 1987 cult classic Hellraiser. But who am I? Local knowledge. Question 10. Which Birmingham-born singer-songwriter, classically trained at the Royal Birmingham Conservatoire, went from working as a CBSO receptionist to winning a MOBO award for her album Sing to the Moon, performed for the Queen and composed for the Royal Shakespeare Company before returning to headline a 5-star orchestral show with the CBSO in 2025. How's your knowledge for this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the quiz. News. Question 1. At the BAFTA TV Awards, 16-year-old Owen Cooper became the youngest ever winner of the Best Supporting Actor prize. What hit Netflix drama did he star in? Adolescence. Question 2. What type of animal has been born in Scotland for the first time and is named in honour of Sir David Attenborough? Atty the Sloth. Question 3. Which historic location will the Beatles transform into a 7-floor museum? 3 Savile Row. their former record label headquarters. Sport. Question 4. Who scored Italy's equalising goal in the Euro 2020 final against England at Wembley? Leonardo Bonucci. Question 5. Where do Scottish Premiership side Aberdeen play their home matches? Piddodrie. Remember when? Question 7. Lord Louis Mountbatten was appointed Viceroy of India. Ralph Richardson was knighted. The City of Edinburgh launched an international festival of music and drama. Dennis Compton scored 3,816 runs in one season. But what was the year? 1947. Question 7. Australia celebrated its bicentennial. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was indicted on charges of conspiracy to defraud the US government. TV personality Russell Harty died, and Michael Crawford starred in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. But what was the year? 1988. Who am I? Question 8. An actress, I was born in Hampstead in 1931. I appeared in sketches featuring Ronnie Corbett and Ronnie Barker. However, the role I am best known for is Hyacinth Bouquet's nervous next-door neighbour, Elizabeth, in the sitcom Keeping Up Appearances. Josephine Toosan. Question 9. A director and fantasy writer, I was born in Liverpool in 1952. Stephen King once called me the future of horror. After being displeased by several film adaptations of my work in the 1980s, I went on to direct the film adaptation of my novel, The Hellbound Heart, which became the 1987 cult classic Hellraiser. But who am I? Clive Barker. Local knowledge. Question 10. Which Birmingham-born singer-songwriter, classically trained at the Royal Birmingham Conservatoire, went from working as a CBSO receptionist to winning a MOBO award for her album Sing to the Moon, performed for the Queen and composed for the Royal Shakespeare Company before returning to headline a five-star orchestral show with the CBSO in 2025? Laura Mvula. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Hi, this is Kate, and I'll be reading you some articles from the Express and Star. The 19th of May, law firm makes decision to expand negligence team amid rising demand. Leading clinical negligence and personal injury law firm, Fletcher's Solicitors, has expanded its specialist dental negligence practice into Birmingham as part of its ongoing national growth strategy. The move follows the firm's expansion into both regions last year after acquiring Shoesmith's personal injury and clinical negligence practices. Fletcher's Solicitors now operates the largest clinical negligence practice in the UK. The teams will be led by Associate Kate Parr, who will oversee dental negligence operations across multiple locations within the business. Kate Parr, Associate and Team Leader within Fletcher's Dental Negligence Practice, said, "We are seeing a clear and sustained rise in dental negligence inquiries, highlighting the growth need for specialist legal expertise in this field. Expanding into Birmingham allows us to better support clients locally while continuing to deliver a high standard of representation our teams are known for." Katie brings more than 16 years' experience in dental negligence and has built a strong reputation for securing justice for her clients. She previously led a landmark case in the Royal Courts of Justice, which resulted in the highest ever general damages award for a dental negligence claim, a record that remains unbroken. Over the past 12 months, the firm's dental negligence division has seen significant growth, including a 135% increase in signed cases and the addition of 8 new fee earners to its Liverpool team. The expansion will initially see the creation of dedicated teams in both locations, with plans to grow around 7 fee earners in each office across a range of roles from Grade A to Grade D. The latest development forms part of the firm's broader strategy to boost its presence in key regions across England. Peter Rigby, Managing Director of Fletcher's Clinical Negligence Practice, said, "This expansion reflects our long-term investment in growing a dedicated dental negligence capability across the country. By establishing stronger regional teams, we're building the infrastructure needed to support continued national growth. Expanding into Birmingham is the next step in our growth strategy as we continue to build a truly national practice with strength in major regional centres." 7 years in jail for shooting near school. A gunman has been jailed over a shooting near Backcountry Primary School. Omar Khan of Farnham Road, Birmingham, was jailed for a total of 7 years and 7 months following a shooting on Rushmere Road, Tipton, at 3:25 in July last year, close to a primary school on Sandgate Road. Police called to the scene found 2 casings and 2 live rounds of ammunition on the floor. Khan was identified by police after officers conducted CCTV trawls. They identified a car and a man could be seen reaching into his rear waistband and holding a firearm on the street. Khan, 26, was then seen speaking with a group of men, and only minutes later, a firearm discharge could be heard, with Khan then spotted fleeing the scene. On August the 18th, Khan was arrested when armed officers saw the same car that had been involved in the shooting. Finding him behind the wheel, he was arrested and also found in possession of a knife. Khan appeared at Birmingham Crown Court last week after pleading guilty to possession of a firearm with intent to cause fear of violence, possession of ammunition for a firearm without a certificate, possession of a bladed article in a public place, and driving a motor vehicle without a licence or insurance. Thankfully, no one was injured during this incident, but the outcome could have been so much worse, PC Kyle Barrowing, who investigated the case, had said. He added, Khan decided to carry out his crime next to a primary school, putting not only those involved at risk, but also innocent children, their families and loved ones in danger when they were simply collecting their children at the end of the school day. Items collected for food bank stolen in parish church raid. Items collected for a food bank were stolen during a parish church break-in. It was the third raid at Luke's Church, Elwell Street, Mesticroft in Wednesbury this year. The congregation was told of the break-in at the regular Sunday service, and the church and that of the neighbouring St Bartholomew's are now led by Canon Dr Teo Alamunya, who only joined from Bushbury Parish just after Easter. Among the items taken were the musical instruments, a sandwich toaster, a vacuum cleaner, a vase, 2 bottles of communion wine, coffee, chocolate, shortbread, biscuits and milk. Anyone with any information can contact police via live chat online or by calling 101, quoting 20/250684/26. Traders arrested over illegal tobacco. Suspected dealers have been arrested and thousands of pounds of counterfeit goods seized across the West Midlands. A multi-force agency including police, Trading Standards, HMRC and Immigration Services held a crackdown on high street stores with suspected links to organised crime. It saw more than 10 suspected dealers arrested and thousands of pounds of counterfeit tobacco and illegal vapes seized. In Wolverhampton, a raid at a city centre shop found a 17-year-old boy who was working behind the counter alone. Thousands of what police to believe were counterfeit cigarettes were found hidden in boxes for barbecue sets, along with suspected cannabis/CBD laced sweets. In Samwell, six people were arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs after officers carried out operations in both Cradley High Street and Oldbury. In Stourbridge, several bin bags full of what were believed to be illegal vapes were seized, while in Birmingham, police arrested three men for possession with intent to supply nitrous oxide at a shop on the Ladypool Road. The drugs were found behind a counter, along with keys to a van parked metres away. When searched, the van was also found to contain nitrous oxide. Three men were arrested as police searched shops around Coventry on Thursday. Assistant Chief Constable Andy Parsons, who oversaw the operation, said, "We know that shops which sell illegal cigarettes, vapes and other counterfeit goods are often linked to serious organised crime, including exploitation of vulnerable people, as well as violence and antisocial behaviour."
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I call them cabin conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin conversations about World Music Day. This annual celebration, held on the 21st of June, taps into the universal language of music and widespread appeal in all its forms. World Music Day began with the City event in 1982. Originating in Paris, France, known as Fête de la Musique, bringing musicians, street performers, concerts and music lovers together to share this remarkable human talent of expressing emotions and physical skills in a multitude of different ways. Due to the attraction's enormous popularity, the EU made it officially a cultural event. Today, musical venues and historical museums provide public accessible music in around 100 countries. Theories of what constitutes music range from melody with vocal sounds from the Stone Age onwards through to natural-made instruments using materials like rocks, gourds, animal skins, wood, metal, bone, etc. Of course, singing needs no music accompaniment and is perceived as helping social groups to develop communication and maintain close-knit communities. Since 5000 BC, Egyptian priest physicians were using music for healing purposes, along with tribal shamans, religious orders, and the Greek father of medicine, Hippocrates, credited for the doctor's Hippocratic Oath, was playing music to his patients back in 400 BC. The British Association for Music Therapy believes there are wider healing effects of sound in psychological clinical intervention, assisting those with verbal communication difficulties and improving baby and parent bonding. At the opposite end of the age range, music is helping the elderly cope with dementia and feelings of isolation. Even the trend for sound bathing uses metal gongs, one of the most ancient designed instruments, originating from rock gongs, natural stones which resonate sound when struck. There is one fine example of a shaped edge rock gong found on an archaeological dig in Sudan, Africa, and donated to the British Museum. Social media too has many examples of diverse and experimental rhythmic sound, such as improvising with hitting hollow tubes, known as boom whackers, and substituting drums with pots, dustbins, or oil drums. Woodwind flutes were next on the evolution scale, with hand-carved flutes made of bone or mammoth tusks ivory, discovered on further archaeological digs in Slovenia and Germany, dating to over 35,000 years ago. Interestingly, cave paintings in southwestern France depict a string bow being used by a tribal medicine person, subsequently found to be played by American tribes and current San tribal people of the Kalahari Desert, Africa, who actually convert their hunting longbows for musical use. Later, evidence in the Indian subcontinent produced the multi-stringed instruments of the lyre and the harp, which led eventually to the harpsichord and, of course, the well-known modern piano. In 1971, the BBC TV Christmas show of Morecambe and Wise included a comedy sketch of Grieg's piano concerto with André Previn conducting the orchestra and Eric Morecambe at the soloist's piano making a terrible din, whereby Previn cannot resist pointing out that Eric is playing all the wrong notes, to which he replies to the world-famous conductor, "I'm playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order." Although the premise is funny, it does highlight the fact that music can be a very subjective art form and not always rigidly structured. Take, for example, the somewhat random but tuneful style, jazz. However, going back to the basics of vocal arrangements can still encapsulate the essence of harmony. The polyphonic pieces, polyphonic meaning many sounds or voices, mostly began as folk songs and is unique to each region of England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. The oldest known British song is from the mid-13th century, written on a manuscript found in Reading Abbey, Berkshire, titled "Suma is a Cumin Inn," and sung not only in the original Wessex dialect, but in a medieval polyphonic round of six parts. Recorded these days by interpretive musicians, it still retains the sentiment of summer arriving as the cuckoo song. Here, by kind permission of Simon Mayer and Hilary James through acousticsrecords.co.uk, is an extract of their own version of "Suma is a Coming In."
Suma is a coming in. Suma is a coming in. Suma said to go with me. Suma said to go with me. Sing a word 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 to go with me.
Records, these are some Guinness World Records relating to British music achievements. In 2014, the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester had the greatest number of people playing a single piano simultaneously, managing to get 16 pianists around the keyboard. Unfortunately, this world record was subsequently broken by a group of Cypriot classical pianists with 25 playing in 2023. On a much grander scale, in 2013, four corns were decommissioned across the UK. To mark this historic event, a piece of music was written by Lise Ottagina and Joshua Portway with composer Orlando Goff. They gathered three brass bands on the coast, 55 ships on the North Sea, and operated the Sauter Lighthouse Foghorn for the very last time, to perform their Foghorn Requiem live in Sunderland, North East England. A musical piece made all the more difficult as it needed the conductor to coordinate bands, computer-controlled GPS to each ship, and factor in sound time delays because they were several miles distance from the lighthouse, while still delivering the best performance for audiences on the cliff tops. May you enjoy the beauty and benefits of music, whatever the style.
TNF Soundings.
Well,
Welcome to SVI Summer Activities List. A warm welcome to SVI's activities, which you'll hear about in the next 10 minutes, coming up for June and indeed running through to July. And it is a warm welcome as far as the weather's concerned, because it does look as if it'll be perking up towards the end of this week and over the bank holiday, by which time we hope you'll have received this activities list. First then, we'll hear a brief list of contents of the 18 or 19 tracks contained in this audio. After that, Trevor will be along to tell you about all the activities coming up, which you can enjoy over the next month or two.
A brief list of contents for our June and July activities. Track 1. Contents for this audio version. Track 2. Active 60 trip to Evesham Valley. Track 3. Wander in nature walks. Track 4. Tea and toast guests. Track 5. Men's group. Track 6. SVI rocks. Track 7. Dartmouth Park walks. Track 8, Active 60 Breakfast Brunch. Track 9, Active 60 Styleport Trip. Track 10, Women's Coffee Afternoon. Track 11, SVI Open Meeting in West Bromwich. Track 12, Unlocking Potential. Track 13, Active 60 Summer Afternoon Tea. Track 14, Supported Gym Sessions. Track 15, Line Dancing. Track 16, Aquafit. Track 17, Showdown. Track 18, Bookings and Payment. Track 19, SVI, Contact Details.
Hello, this is Trevor. Dear SVI members and friends, how quickly this year has gone. It's summer already and we've been rushing in to get some activities for you to choose before the schools break up. Active 60 trip to the Valley, Evesham, Thursday the 28th of May. Join us for some fresh country air and a day out at the Valley, Evesham, with cafes, outdoor activities, a garden centre and shops. There's something for everyone. There's even a little train that will take you round that country park if you don't fancy a walk. We will meet at West Bromwich bus station at 9:45 a.m. for a 10 a.m. prompt departure. Cost of travel per person is £15. There is no entrance fee for the Valley, however there is a charge for the train and some other activities. There are still a few places left, so contact us to book and pay in advance. Wonder in Nature. Nature Connection Activities. Our next session is at Westmethic Park, Monday, the 1st of June from 1:30 p.m. Sessions are once a month until October. Sophie from Wonder in Nature will guide you in gentle, mindful walks. These sessions will offer a chance to slow down and connect more deeply with nature and each other. Refreshments will be able to buy from the Westmethic Park Pavilion Cafe. Over the course of the project, we also plan to capture an audio story of the Nature Connection experiences and create a nature-inspired art piece as a group. Please contact SVI to sign up for the walks. Tea and toast, the first Wednesday of the month, 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. Come along for tea, toast, and a chat with SVI friends. In June and July, we are pleased to welcome the following guest speakers. On Wednesday the 3rd of June, we have Arfan from the Let's Talk service at Black Country Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust. Let's Talk supports anyone who is feeling isolated or lonely in the Black Country. Arfan will talk to us about their services and about the volunteering opportunities available. On Wednesday the 1st of July, our speaker is PJ from the Sight Loss Council, Thomas Pocklington Trust. They want to hear about the access issues that are important to you as blind and visually impaired people, including environment, health services, transport and so on. Let's talk about IT. Monday the 8th of June, 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. in the SVI office. Come along to join us for an informal session where we'll chat about all things IT. Whether you're a tech whiz or just getting started, everyone's welcome. Barry Lane, IT whiz from Beacon, will be with us for the next few sessions to share his knowledge. Contact the SVI office to book your place. Men's group, Wednesday the 17th of June, 10:30 a.m. till midday at the SVI office. Join the men for a social get-together, a chance to chat and set the world to rights. With tabletop accessible games like dominoes, If you want to have a go, we want more men to join our men's groups, and we welcome ideas of what we could do in the future and where we could go. SVI rocks next session on Wednesday the 10th of June, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. John Rodrigo and Sarah Ann, for our popular SVI rock sessions in the SVI common room, sing or bring along an instrument and make some noise with us. Boost your musical skills and confidence. SVI rock sessions will be on 24th of June and the 8th of July, leading up to a performance at SVI's open meeting on Monday the 13th of July. Contact us to book your place. Dartmouth Park Walks Are Back, starting on Thursday the 11th of June. Summer's definitely here when the SVI Park Walks come back, and from the second Thursday in June, walks will take place each week. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please tell us if you're coming so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. Active 60 Breakfast Brunch at the Interceptor, Monday the 15th of June, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Back due to popular demand, we're having another breakfast brunch get together at the Interceptor, New Square, West Bromwich. Join us to enjoy a full English, a tasty snack, or even an early lunch. Please let us know that you're coming and we can reserve the table. You can just order and pay on the day. Socialise trip to Stourport-on-Severn with a boat trip, Monday the 29th of June. Bring your family and friends to enjoy a good old-fashioned day out, including a trip on the River King. We will meet at West Bromwich bus station at 9:30 for a 9:45 a.m. departure for Stourport, arriving at about 11 a.m. We will take a short riverboat cruise, returning for free time for lunch at a cafe or pub, or why not have fish and chips sitting by the river, or even a picnic. The cost will be £22 per person. This includes coach travel and a 1-hour boat trip with tea and coffee. We expect to be back in West Bromwich by about 5:30 p.m. Booking and payment in advance is required. SVI Women's Group Coffee and Cake Afternoon, Wednesday the 8th of July, 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. in the SVI Common Room. Enjoy tasty sweet treats while chatting about anything and everything important to women. From the serious stuff to the social, tell us what you would like to do over the next few months. It's your group. So do please join and share your views on topics such as should men be allowed to come into some women's groups events. SVI Summer Open Meeting, Monday the 13th of July, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. West Bromwich Town Hall Council Chamber. For our summer open meeting, we welcome you all to the Town Hall, where you'll be entertained by your very own SVI Rock Choir. We'll give you an update on the latest SVI funding situation and our actions as a result of our unlocking potential discussions. Hope to have a council representative at this meeting to answer your questions about our funding. Refreshments will be available, travel expenses will be met, and we'll have a raffle to help with SVI funds. Unlocking potential, getting more involved. We will have more workshops and training sessions coming up over the next 6 weeks. We will send these out to you in separate letter when we have confirmed all the dates. Active 60 Summer Afternoon Tea, Monday the 20th of July, 1:30 p.m. Hales Owen Golf Club, the Lesos, Hales Owen, B628QF. Join us to indulge in a traditional afternoon tea in the idyllic countryside surroundings of Hales Owen Golf Club, with sandwiches, quiche, sausage rolls, scones and cakes. There's something for everyone. Posh frocks and smart suits optional. Cost will be £20 per person plus travel. Call us to book your place now for this bit of summery indulgence. Supported gym sessions. Every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Portway Lifeway Centre. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members, from treadmills and bikes to weights. There's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing, every Tuesday, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m, Dartmouth Central Club. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Aquafit every Wednesday lunchtime between 1 to 2 p.m. Portway Lifestyle Centre. Get summer body ready. Aquafit has restarted and there is still plenty of time to sign up, so come and give it a try. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone. With expert instructors, Alison or Karen, contact SVI if you are interested. Showdown, every Tuesday afternoon at 2 p.m. and Thursday morning 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Portway Lifestyle Centre. Following the success of our team's first competition experience, we are holding more showdown sessions. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport similar to table tennis and air hockey, designed for blind and visually impaired people, but anyone can play. Contact the SVI office for more information. Bookings and payments. All activities must be booked in advance. Spaces fill up fast. Call 0121 525 4810 or email info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk to reserve your spot. We can now take card payments in person or over the phone. You can also pay by bank transfer or cash. Just get in touch and we'll help you with the details. We look forward to seeing you at one or more of our up and coming events. Best wishes, the SVI team.
Sandwell Visually Impaired CIO, SVI Office, West Bromwich Town Hall, Lodge Road, West Bromwich, B78AY. Office telephone number 0121 525 4810. Email info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk. Website www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk. Registered charity number 1175066. Thank you to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us. James, Debbie, Lauren, Sarbjit, Jenny and Kate. Thanks to Sue for picking all the articles. Thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz. A big thank you to Trevor for reading the SVI activities letter. There's a lot going on at SVI, so make sure you listen to that and see if there's anything you're interested in doing. Thank you to Cyrita for uploading everything to the website and for the podcast, and to Tony and Gavin for putting everything on the USB sticks and CDs and sending them out. I'd also like to welcome any new listeners that we've got. So we, Trevor and myself, went out and visited a couple of people to give them boom boxes. If you are listening, welcome to you.
Thanks for saying it all, Pam. No room for me to say anything else because we're out of time. Bye-bye for this week. Enjoy the bank holiday and we'll be back with you next week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.